Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
So, did you look at yourself in the mirror this morning? What did you see? Who did you see? Did you like the person? Did you smile at yourself? Were you pretty enough? Did you have a flaw? Yeah, maybe something you couldn't conceal, but maybe something that went a little bit deeper than the facade that you try to put on every day. I'm not talking about makeup or clothing or a fancy car or an image. I'm talking about that part that doesn't seem to fit. That part that you just really want to shake off and it makes you resentful. You resent the fact that you have this flaw. And it could be a physical attribute, which a lot of people are very shallow, and that's what counts. So, you know, they may have one eye higher than the other. They may have a lazy eye. You know, they may have a birthmark, distinctive marking that stands out far above and beyond what anybody else would see. But it's just an imperfection. It stands out, and it makes you realize that you are that different. Maybe it's not about that shallow concept. Maybe it's about the bad choices that you've made, like with your career or your marriage or where you live, you know, your path of education, you know, choices you've made. It pulls you apart from people that you see that are right next to you every day that smile, and they seem like they're happy and everything's perfect in their lives, to the point that they feel compelled to show you pictures and tell you stories while you sit there, and you realize that you do have that blemish, that blight on your very soul for some reason, with a chip on your shoulder, and you only blame yourself because you are a fuck up. You fuck up every time something good seems to be happening. You screw it up. You have to. You're compelled to just let go and be careless and not do the things necessary to maintain a path that would keep you in happy days. Maybe you desperately wanted children at one point. And when you had them, you realized that it's just not what you expected. You look at your own kids and you realize they're not perfect. And they drive you nuts. You can't control them. They suck the life out of you and they cost you money and they get you in trouble when they do dumb shit with Department of Family Services. And you feel a guilt because of that. Because, you know, those are your children, and it shreds you apart, and you hate yourself because you can even think of something so horrible, so dreadful, as to deny your own children. Or maybe you don't try hard enough at your job. Maybe you've been handed a responsibility at your place of employment, and you wanted it, but once you're there, you just kind of think you've got it made, and become lazy and complacent, and you lose all ground of everything that you worked for up to that point because you hit that comfort zone and you felt that you could let go. Maybe that's what faith is for some people, that ability to let go and think everything's going to be okay. But it's still part of you that you wish that you could change. It's being compelled to just do nothing. And it's the hardest thing. It's the hardest habit you've ever had. It's like procrastination. You know, so many things in your life could have happened, good things. Or maybe you blame the shitty life you have now on the fact that you missed that train, you were 15 minutes late. And try as you might, set the clocks in the house ahead by 30 minutes to try to play some mental game with the alarm clock. But you procrastinate, and it's cost you a lot of things, and you hate that part of you. And we all wake up in the morning, and we look in that mirror again, and what do we see? But for now, I'd like to say hello to our lovely producer and lovely, wonderful friend, Ruth Ann.
Hey. Oh, how are you?
I am doing very well. How are you this evening?
I am too. We have just a very, very small amount of snow where I am. And it looks sort of wintry, but I have spring in my heart. So, you know, confusion, of course.
Eternal optimist, what are you doing here?
Yeah, that's sort of like, But, you know, it still has not been a normal winter, so I'm not really complaining about the snow. It's already starting to leave. Further north and further south of me, they've got a lot of snow that's not going anywhere for a few days, but mine will be gone shortly.
Yeah, well, a lot of people think, you know, it's an inconvenience for snow. You know, it boggles down traffic and everything, but you have to think about it. Nature appreciates that snow. So we always have a human perspective of things. We look at everything through the eyes of a human, and we don't realize that some creatures, some plants, actually depend on a snowfall, and nature loves a good snow.
Right, we need the moisture. We need the water. So,
yeah.
You know, it's okay, and it's pretty. No matter, I mean, every year, I just for the first couple snowfalls, I'm just in awe again because it's just so beautiful. So, you know,
there's something childlike, you know, about watching a good snowfall because you always remember as a kid, you'd get excited because you'd think school would be closed.
Right, and you can go out and play in it, and even though we haven't had enough to play in here, but, you know, it's not that I wouldn't, so.
we didn't really get much snow where I'm from in northeastern Alabama. You know, we're way high up in the mountains, and all the old people up there used to say it's too cold to snow, and you know, I never really understood what they meant by that until I got older, but, you know, we would have probably one or two good snows a winter, and it was pretty much like clockwork, so you know, we never had anything major. But I think the biggest snow I've ever seen, it would probably be a tie between New York and Virginia. Missouri was pretty intense, too.
yeah, Missouri would be, that I know. And New York, yeah, because I've been there in the snow, yeah.
Oh, speaking of Missouri, you know, and one of those things that you hate about yourself because of stupid choices you've made. When I lived in Missouri, that was one of the dumbest decisions.
That was Missouri. Explain that to us, would you, Dana?
it's just, you know, it was a turning point in my young life. And, you know, I was really young and wild and carefree and rebellious. And I was quite young. I was only 19, and I married a man younger than me, if you can believe that.
Wow.
But, you know, he just out of high school, and the only option he had was basically to go in the military, and he did. And he was very, very, you know, naive, very inexperienced in life, and you know, probably death had never crossed his mind. And he went to Kuwait during the first Gulf War. And I can remember I was up in Missouri because that's where he was stationed, was at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Right.
And then he was deployed. I can remember him getting on the bus, and it was raining, and it was so cold. And the water was above my ankles in the parking lot. It was like a torrential downpour, you know, one of the Midwest floods going on.
Oh, yes.
And he was deploying. He was going to Kuwait, and he was so careless and so, you know, I knew he was not going to make it back. And, I mean, he did. He made it back. But it was just, you know, that moment in my life, I felt that I was responsible for him being there because, you know, I should have thought ahead and thought, you know, we're young, we shouldn't do this, because I knew that was the only option he had, was to go in the military. And I kind of blamed myself. And you know, every day he was over there was an absolute nightmare.
Well, wouldn't he have gone whether you were married or not? I mean,
no, he would not have joined the military because he would have been living at home and going to college.
Okay, I got it.
And you know, I was in Missouri the whole time he was there, and it broke me. And, you know, I recovered from it eventually, but, you know, I made a lot of horrendous choices in my mid and late 20s that I know directly, you know, came from the trauma of the stupid shit decisions that I made then. So, good show about self-hatred and loathing. So there, the audience, I just shared one of my shitty moments in life. So now it's your turn. Callers, call in. If not, Ruth Ann's got to tell us about one of
those. Otherwise, I have to think of something. Come on, people, call. I've been trying. I made a lot of stupid decisions, but I don't think I ever hated myself for them. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I made those 18-year-old, 19-year-old mistakes, too. I mean, oh, Jesus.
We could clarify, you know, that it doesn't necessarily have to be self-hatred. I mean, it's the same thing, I believe. There's a fine line between the two. I mean, it would be a very, very hard measure to distinguish, you know, that where they parlay over into each other. But,
yeah.
You know, self-hatred and self-pity. Self-pity is a very, very negative, low end of the scale emotion. And self-pity and self-hatred are probably, you know, made of the same.
Yeah, cousins or siblings or something.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to cause the same brain chemistry to go on. So
a couple times because I made some bad choices. You know, I had never been. We've talked before about disciplining your kids and things, and I knew people who actually beat their children. I was never even spanked. So the idea of somebody hitting me.
Mm-hmm.
Such a it was so alien, and yet it happened, and I was just almost struck to a I almost couldn't move kind of thing, and it was not even that, you know, you think, well, you wouldn't do something like that again, but in a row I was with two different guys. We did that. I mean, after that, I like caught on, but I don't know if it was just because I was so inexperienced with that I would have chosen another one.
They say there's a pattern that you know, there's something
I didn't know the signs the first time. I didn't, and I should have recognized the second time, but it was a whirlwind thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, there I am seeing stars again. And incidentally, people, You may have seen those old cartoons I remember seeing with somebody, they get hit, and then, you know, there would be the stars that they see.
Birds chirping.
I've seen them. I know that was based on fact, because I've seen stars because I was hit in the head so badly. You know, it's like, but it won't happen again because...
I've been hit so hard, the way I would describe it is... when cable goes off, that snow. Of course, I don't know nowadays, you know, kids don't remember that snow.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
that dead channel, you know, and then your vision would close in like that snow on a TV, like tunnel vision real slow. But yeah, them stars, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So it was, I did, I think, a whole, you know, a couple different times, some kind of a pity party for myself, just like, why, how did I get here? You know, what have I done wrong? I have done nothing wrong except make a bad choice. But I mean, I had not done anything to be, you know, beat for.
How long did it take you to get out? How long, in both accounts, did it take you to get out and say it's not going to change?
The first one took longer because I was stunned, and also, you know, that because I didn't have experience, that whole thing, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again, and blah, blah, blah. And I realized that, you know, he had watched his father beat his mother, which I hadn't really known when I got involved with him. That took, it didn't take years by any means, trust me, but several months. And we moved a lot, we fought a lot, and it was just because I was one of those, okay, you know, going to try to, I knew I could always get a divorce, but I really wanted it to work because I didn't have anything else that I wanted to do at the time, you know, which is really lousy. It's a bad reason. The second one was, like I said, very whirlwind, and it just lasted a very few months. I remember that one because my parents came to pick me up on Christmas, and that was one of those when you feel like, what have I done kind of thing. I had called them, and they picked me up, and I remember, I wasn't a vegetarian or vegan at the time, but I remember stopping at this little diner on Christmas that was open, and I had grilled cheese. I remember sitting across from my parents, and that was probably one of the most painful times of my life, seeing them, because, you know, I was an only child, they loved me immensely, and seeing them look at me, bruised and all of that, that was very painful.
Very traumatic for you.
Yeah. It was just, you know, because, and they never said to me, you know, why the hell did you get involved with him? They never said anything like that. They were just there to be supportive. And that, you know, even probably if they would have yelled at me, well, then I would have really been in shock. But, I mean, you know, they never, like, criticized. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, you know, you got beat up, you called, we came and got you kind of thing, and, you know, now you're going home. Then, like the other one, I mean, that one, you know, came around crying and he'd never do it again. And, I mean, thank God I got it then. It's like, well, no, because it gets worse. I always tell women that, you know, if they've hit you once, you know, no, it's not a fluke. It will happen again.
It opens that door. It just, it breaks down that barrier.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let me ask you on either accounts, drugs, alcohol, or substance abuse, is any of that involved?
No. That with those two, no. Now, isn't that strange that then years later, I did get involved with a real drug addict. I mean, you think, but he never hit me.
I usually too stoned to hit you.
he was a crackhead. He would make me crazy in other ways, but he never hit me. But those two didn't. But it was just young. I mean, I was young. They were young. And like I said, the one had watched his father beat his mother. The other one had watched his mother totally, I shouldn't say emasculate his father, but she definitely wore the pants.
Oh.
And so I don't know if that had anything to do with him striking out.
There's the whole theory that nature versus nurture. And a lot of people would say that it's an environmental thing, you know, when a young man or even a young woman, because, you know, there's a lot of women out there, and people believe that it's an environmental thing, that they're exposed to it. But, you know, I don't think that in 100% of those cases that is necessarily true.
No.
Because I believe a lot of genetics, I think genetics has a lot in play there, because if somebody has a penchant to be violent in the first place, you know, their genes. And if you think, we're a violent species as it is, you know, we're primates, but we're very intelligent and we have really nasty weapons and big hates for each other. You know, we have a lot of axes to grind with one another because of what we are and what we want, what we think we can possess. And I think that we're all inherently inclined to be violent. And I believe it's more of an issue of who has restraint, not who is going to trying to be violent, but who has the capacity to hold more restraint. Because I think we all have because I mean, if you get backed into a corner, if your life is threatened, you're going to turn violent.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, you know, they look at violence as a negative thing, because it is a negative thing. But you also have to look at the other end of the time when violence is a positive thing. And that's another part of accepting, you know, a negative is violence. You know, either you're going to use it, you know, to hurt someone, or you're going to use it to protect yourself or someone
right.
you love.
Or someone you love. Or some, yeah, yeah.
You never want to completely deny the fact that, you know, you can be violent. Because a lot of people would deny it and say, no, I would never harm a fly. You know, I couldn't be violent. But they're only thinking about lashing out at somebody else. They don't think about the capabilities of how brutal they could possibly be if their life was threatened or if their family was threatened.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, yeah, you're right. It's not, even though you may have seen, you know, your family may have done whatever, because they say, like, a lot of abusers were abused. And I'm sure that's true. But on the other hand, there's a lot of abusers who weren't. And there's a lot of people who have been abused who turn out to be perfectly lovely, wonderful people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it doesn't hold. I think that sometimes, though, people, when they see something, if that's the only thing they know, and even though they may have seen something on TV that would be different, or they know that everybody doesn't do that, maybe, still it's hard for them to break away. Because it has solved, I mean, they've seen it supposedly solve issues. And so it's like, okay, well, that worked for my father. You know, he knocked my mother down and she shut up. So
yeah.
I can do that and it'll work just for us too. You know, but I think immaturity has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm a very big proponent of trial marriages.
Yeah.
Whether you call it that or you just live together or whatever, you know, and I realize that sometimes you can live together with somebody for 5 years and they're wonderful, and once you get that paper signed, it's all over. So
it's harder to get away from them.
Yeah.
A lot of people
say,
like you can actually physically walk away, but there's that little mental, emotional attachment that piece of paper has attached to it. And
yeah, I mean, and it's a legal thing then. At that point, you know, some court is going to decide what you get from that house that you're living in, kind of thing. And it's a big difference.
Well, and sharing the person's name and just being attached to them legally like that, there's some type of little, I think it goes down to just a little speck of sociopathy, because if you think the way that a sociopath thinks and the way that they imagine things and relate to things in mind, that little piece of paper and that marriage, you know, you have that person.
Mm-hmm.
And in some little universe, some little aspect, somewhere, it is going to be acknowledged that that person belongs to you.
Right. You are the owner now.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have ownership papers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's another thing. You know, we need to look at the way relationships play out and the attachments that people have. And do you want to hurt someone that you love? You know, you can say an abuser does not love somebody that they beat on, but a lot of the times their love is very intense, and that's why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an excuse. It's a simple fact that they love that person so much. You know, they hurt themselves because that love is so intense.
And it's not, I mean, it's, I don't know, that's not the kind of love I want, that kind of
no.
thing, because it's a very narcissistic kind of thing, and it's really there again. It has more to do with ownership and control than
very possessive
and love.
Yeah, very, very possessive. And you know, if we talk about arranged marriages, you know, you can also look at the different cultures throughout history that have stoled children to other families to arrange for political marriages.
Right. Political, whether it's like land involved, it used to be, that was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But and the power and the, you know, who's going to rule this country or this section of the country, the princes and the prince and this and that.
Yeah. Who's going to hold title and land, yeah. And, well, once again, there you go, the violence could play there because, you know, people would fight for title and land. And it's like, you know, you have a choice, either, you know, fight a war or sell off your kids. And it's just, you have no choice, especially, you know, if you have another faction like a religious group that's rallying behind you. And history is quite interesting. We could probably go do like a whole show on the background atrocities of history, because you can see the forefront. They look at the wars and the things in most obvious written history.
The religious ones, just because religion has played such a word. And now when I'm talking religion, I'm talking about the big three, the ones that go back to Abraham or claim to. Those are the ones that have caused so much pain and agony in the world.
Oh, yeah, and I'm talking about, like, domestic violence. You think about a lot of the little loopholes that a lot of religious groups do use at times to commit violence against, usually typically it's inflicted on a woman, but there's also community violence that happens to the men. I mean, you think of the Mormon community has been very strict, and they've executed their own members. Because, you know, a lot of the Mormons hold their own trials, you know, within their own little tight-knit communities.
Right.
And they do execute their own members. And, you know, this is like Joseph Smith, you know, Brigham Young approved, stamped and approved. You know, it's okay to pull these people out of your community if they fucked up, and, you know, you can kill them. It's our business. You know, you don't get involved because our holy book says so. And...
But yeah, a lot of cultures have that going on, and it's funny how in Chinatown, almost any Chinatown, I'm just familiar with one in Chicago, but the crime, you don't hear much about. I mean, years ago there was some tourists who, maybe one or two were killed in Chinatown. It was a big thing, because usually you don't hear of any crime there, because if it's theirs, they take care of it. And it's just like, okay, you're not going to read about it. It's just going to, you know, they used to have what they call them, the Tong gangs and things like that. But the different, you know, and it's not just Chinese, but, you know, they're just going to take care of it themselves. They don't need the Chicago Police Department.
Well, because, you know, to them, culturally, you know, there's a right and there's a wrong. And, you know, there's no gray area. You know, there's no shaded area in between. And, you know, if you're in a community and they believe so adamantly of a way of life. And so that's one thing that, yeah, a lot of cultures do contain violent bylaws and different little clauses for their members. But some things in different cultures and communities are beautiful. And some people would like to eradicate a lot of different ethnic groups because of their diversity, because of the violence committed in a lot of these groups. But if you look at eradicating that, you're going to wipe out the beautiful things about that culture, too.
Well, and you know, I mean, here in the United States, who the fuck are we to talk about what other cultures do? When we have the greatest percentage of people in prisons of any place in the world, we still have the death penalty, which most or all first world countries don't.
Quick plug, next week our show, we're going to talk about some botched executions and hopefully get some audio of some botched executions. which is happening in Florida, but I apologize for interrupting.
But that, well, that sounds like a gruesome, topic.
I'm opposed to the death penalty, and anything I can do to call some bastards out and make them stop that practice, I will do it.
Yeah, that's it's horrible, and I think of Troy Davis.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when they had gotten the word out somehow to the people outside that it had been, like, called off or stopped or something, and you know, the families are so grateful and all this, and then all of a sudden it's like, nope, it's on. And, you know, it should never have happened in the first place. And it was just, that was just horrid. And at the same time, they were executing someone in Texas, but we didn't hear about it much at all because Troy Davis was the major news story then.
Well, we just recently executed another woman in the United States.
Right.
But, you know, you think about all the DNA analysis that comes back many, many years later after somebody's already been long executed, and it shows that it wasn't them.
Well,
there's so many innocent people that have died, but we'll discuss that horrible business in weeks.
But that, okay, now, people who carry out those kind of executions, I think that, you know, getting back to self-loathing, I think that that would possibly, if they have one humane part in their body, there's going to be some self-loathing or something going on. You know, that's something certain professions, I think, would bring it out. You know, we talk about people, how can they look in the mirror? But really, how can some people with the professions they have and all, they have to look and say, God, you know.
How can they live with themselves? You know, like the foreclosures. You know, it kind of comes to mind in the 80s, you know, we had the farm crisis and the mortgage foreclosures, and I think John Mellencamp had written a song called Rain on the Scarecrow, and in the story of the song, the banker comes to seize the family's farm, and he's been a friend for a lifetime, and they tell him that, you know, just because it's his job, it doesn't mean that he's right, that he should do it. And I just, some people have jobs. It's like, you know, you see in movies, they have, like, big bad hitman or, you know, the assassin, but there's people out there that do other more horrible, wretched jobs, like, well, people that work for the Department of Children and Families, for one. That is one agency that has destroyed more homes and at the same time neglected care for children that truly needed it.
That's it. Yeah. They have people who are not trained, who aren't all that smart, working for them, and then they have overloaded workers. I mean, they have so many caseloads, there's no way that the caseworkers can know much about each family situation. And so they make a lot of bad decisions. And you get somebody out of school who, you know, I mean, so they went to college, big deal, and they took these courses. They don't know about life. They don't know what they're doing.
Well, you can take a correspondence course and get a job as a social worker for DFACS. And like you said, it's staffed by very inexperienced young people for the most part. And you have a lot of people in there that they've been there for a while, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're better at their job. And a lot of times these agencies, they live by a strict guideline that the psychology industry, as I call it, would dictate. And you can't do that when you're handling the dynamics of a family. That's one thing that the psychiatric profession cannot and will not ever be able to unwind the dynamics of the human family and personal relationships between people, because everyone is so different.
Okay.
And speaking of, you know, hating oneself, you know, they try to tap that out of people. If you talk about to somebody that's going to therapy or you know, the therapist, their first goal and initiative is to hammer out the parts of people that hate themselves, when I think that if we learn to accept those parts of ourselves, then we'll get along much better.
Yeah.
We just need to accept that they're there and they're a part of us, and that way, you know, we can actually control them better at that point. Because acknowledge, if we only acknowledge that they are there, then we can control them and we can handle them. But if we try to deny it, it's going to come out in ways that, you know, you can't even possibly imagine. It's going to affect different aspects of your life in ways that you couldn't even dream.
Forever, forever, until it's dealt with. I mean, you can sweep it under or put it in the closet as long as you want, but it all this time, it's affecting you.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree. And things like that, I mean, it's, but yeah, there's just certain careers. Another one is a butcher.
Oh, yeah.
I've read that a lot of them are alcoholics, and they should be. Anybody who goes around taking life like that, just murdering animals all the time, yes, this is despicable.
Imagine the anguish that a kosher butcher endures. It takes a special breed of person to be a kosher butcher.
Well, it's still murder, and I mean they can fancy it up all they want, but when you read about the way they really do it, it's not that different from the ones that, you know, just hit them in the head and do whatever. Although they're supposed to cut the throat, I think.
Yeah, kosher. The kosher butchering is they suspend the animal by its hind legs and they cut its throat and let it bleed to death. The kosher butchery is where the animal bleeds to death. And, you know, the other butchering practices, you know, they do use the knocking bolt in the assembly line type thing. I really don't even like talking about it. I mean, we will never have a show about that. So, folks, you don't have to worry about that one.
But that's just, I mean, that's another profession that I personally think, you know, self-loathing would go along with. Anything like that.
You would have to have an amazing ability to completely detach yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of humanity.
And since we are so interconnected with all of the creatures on the planet, with all of nature on the planet, et cetera, to do that, yeah, no wonder they drink. That's one of the, I think, most despicable careers. But, you know, also these people who have some type of office in the government that are doing such horrendous things. Now, some of them are really stupid enough and ignorant enough to not understand the consequences.
They believe they're doing a good job.
You know?
They believe they're doing the right thing, yeah.
And so those people, the self-loathing that should be there because they're such fuck-ups, it's not there because they really are, they think that what they're doing is right. Now, the ones that know better and know that they're just doing it because of the big payoff they get, they should have a problem looking themselves in the mirror.
To me, you know, karma comes into play there because I believe that if you go along and you're so stupid and blind, karma's going to hit you. But if I think you accept the fact and you know that you've done something bad and you're atone for it, I don't think you're going to get that same karmic retribution.
I agree. I mean, you may get some because you did do it after all, but when you really admit it and you do try to make up for it, I think that it's going to be much less.
You, like you said, some people are so blind and brainwashed, and that's the frightening thing is you think of the public school system and the indoctrination process that goes on with our children to make them compliant. So some of them could possibly be those blind little automatons believing that they're doing their patriotic good duty by harassing citizens over things that their rights should be protected.
Yeah.
But another group of people that I often wonder about, and this has happened with me so many times in the past that I've wondered about this group of people because I've dealt with them frequently in the last few years of my life, doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors feel any sort of remorse when they have to turn a patient away that is suffering because the government, you know, may investigate them. You know, it may not have, you know, so twitchy to save their license that you know, they go way beyond protecting themselves. And a lot of patients suffer because of this government intervention on health care.
Yeah.
And that's one thing a lot of people don't realize is if we implement a government subsidized health care program in this country, they will control every single aspect of your life if you want to be treated medically. You cannot allow a government agency to take over your health care because, okay, yeah, you shouldn't smoke in the first place, but, you know, if you do, it's your right. Nobody should tell you, you know, you're aware that it can damage your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to, you know the consequences. You know, smokers be denied. If you don't fit within a certain weight limit, and you think of a lot of people and the problems they have with controlling their weight, they can't help it. The government will say, well, you're not within so much weight. We're going to put you on this regimen and force you. Just think of the torture that people are going to go through just to have health care.
The things that they've been
denied. You know, you cannot drink alcohol at all. You know, you cannot do this. You know, you cannot consume these foods.
Years ago, one of the guys, he was a few years older than my friends and I, one of them had a crush on him, and, you know, so we followed what Charlie did avidly, and he had been laughing because he was a smoker, and he just changed insurance companies for his car, and he got a real deal by saying he wasn't, and it's like, oh my goodness, you know, kind of thing, but it does force people then to lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I understand that, you know, I don't have the answers because why should these 10 people have to pay more for insurance because this one person over here is a smoker and chances are is going to have more complications in his health.
But four out of that group may consume fast food every day of their life.
Exactly. and it's so that there's, you know, there's so many issues to work on. And the food being one of them. Between the GMOs and the fast food, I mean, it's a wonder that people are, you know, as healthy as they are. But, there, you know, so far there's ways to do that, too. I mean, you can actually eat clean. You can actually eat good food. And I'm not saying that it's very hard to get away from GMOs, depending on where you live and how much money you have, to buy organic. But you can grow some, too.
Well, I mean, and it's, you know, that old adage, you know, it's a little cliche, a little passe and everything, but, you know, everything's poisonous now. Everything will give you cancer now. But, you know, it's true. If you think about that statement, you look at it in depth, everything you do, the clothes you wear could be made of a synthetic fiber that, you know, we don't know yet, but, you know, it could cause problems.
Exactly.
We just have
to do the best we can, but, you know, there's some people who definitely aren't doing the best they can. I mean, they've been told and told and told about whether it's food or whatever, and they keep doing it, and then they want pity because they're sick.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at giving it out. It's like, well, you know, I don't like to see people miserable. But when you've been told by me and, you know, half a dozen other people that you need to stop eating this, you know, and you continue on, you know?
Well, I mean, a lot of people, they don't think of what they put into their bodies. I mean, that's what goes into every cell of your body. That is what powers your body. And if you put shit in your body, and you know, I on and off, you know, I have been a vegetarian for most of my life, and, you know, sometimes I will break. You know, I don't do beef because for some strange reason I don't think we should be eating cow, but that's like a whole other story, a whole other crazy day. But I've heard it said, my body is not a graveyard.
Yeah.
And I think that we're evolved enough that, you know, we don't really need to consume other living creatures. I think that we should step away from that.
Oh, right. I mean, we definitely don't need them, and eating them creates a lot of health problems for us. But,
oh, absolutely.
You know, so many people, they've gotten into, they like the taste, and so they selfishly think, well, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm murdering animals, and it doesn't matter. But yet, you know, you try to tap their dog on the nose, and they're going to come undone. Because, like, so where's this difference? I mean, cows are very smart. They love their babies.
It has a nervous system. It feels pain. It can experience fear.
Yeah,
and to me, that, you know, you should not fuck with something that can feel pain and experience fear. That's wrong. I mean,
right. Any sentient thing. It's totally wrong. And
you know, a lot of people may say that, oh, you know, you're bleeding heart liberal and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, my God, you know, put yourself in the animal's place. I mean, if you can do that for 1 minute, you know, put yourself in the place of a helpless creature, which people are so detached that there's no way they could possibly imagine being something that is at the mercy of a creature that's going to cause you a lot of pain, kill you, and eat you.
Right, take you, you know, separate you from your family, torture you, keep you in something you can't even turn around in, and then eventually painfully kill you.
Breed you specifically for that purpose. Breed you specifically to die and feel pain.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
What's wrong with that? You know?
Your life is only there to lose. Yeah.
And you know, like I said, I admit that sometimes I will eat meat. I will do it. And you know, that's one part of myself that I wish I could completely break away. But sometimes I just don't think about it. But I believe if people raise their children to not eat so much meat products, that they wouldn't have the taste for it, because it's just like you said, you know, people have a taste for it. And when you are raised, you know, that's what you develop the taste for when you're
right.
in childhood. And
when
people can work away.
Oh, yeah. I definitely don't miss meat at all. I don't miss the dairy products. I don't miss it. Years ago, I had thought when I went vegetarian, which I did it for the animals, and then, you know, I found out the health benefits and the spiritual benefits, so I mean, I could never go back. But I had thought that what I would miss of all things would be sausage. And what I liked about sausage turned out, I mean, it's the herbs and the spices that were mixed with it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I cook with a lot of herbs and spices. And I've never missed meat. It's just not, yeah, it actually is very revolting to me. And I know where it's coming from, and I find it pretty obnoxious. You know what is amazing to me? People, they were having this whole thing about horse meat being in some Burger King stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what's the big deal? Why is it okay to eat cows but not horses?
Exactly. I made that point, you know, on the social networking site, you know, that I'm like, why are you making a big deal out of it? What a horse is better than a cow? They're both
right.
living creatures, you know?
You're eating dead, rotting meat anyway.
Yeah.
So who cares where it comes from? It's already rotting, and it gets in your body, and it stays in your body some more.
Well, okay. What do we have? The pink slime here too recently, you know, and then we had the Taco Bell mystery meat thing come out. What the fuck are you putting this in your body for, people? I mean, this is, you know, this food is processed. If you look at the ingredient label on any fast food joint's food order, you're going to see the word processed somewhere, if not on everything.
Yeah.
And processed means that there's additives, there's shit put in there. It has gone through a process, that's processed, to turn it into something completely different at a low expense. They want the cheapest product they can possibly pull off to sell to you for the most money, and they don't give a fuck if it's going to kill you, people.
Right. Now, these are the people who know this and continue to do it, like the people who are pushing the corn syrup and this kind of thing, people who are pushing aspartame.
Aspartame.
No.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's known to mess up your brain. And not even to mention everything else it does. But I know people close to me who just, they won't believe that. And I've told them I don't even mention it anymore. Because they can't believe it, you know, because they're always on a quote-unquote diet. And, of course, you know, it's been shown to keep people fat. They don't want to hear it. They think that they're doing the right thing, so they drink all these diet pops and they put it in their coffee and they put it in everything.
And pregnant women drink it because it has a half sugar in it, and yay, they're like deforming their children's brain cells. Aspartame, the way that aspartame started, you had saccharin in the 70s and this cancer scare. Well, okay, let me tell you what they do to these rats in the laboratory. They feed them the chemical, and it's like they use the designation LD, which means lethal dose. And they gave the rats LD50 of saccharin, like 8 times a day for like a month. It's all they gave the rats, you know, lethal dose of saccharin. Of course, they're going to develop cancer and they're going to die. Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld, you can research this and you can look this up for yourself. The two of those worked for a chemical company that was in collusion at that point to have saccharin removed from the market. Aspartame hit the FDA. They passed it on through. They did not run any trials on aspartame whatsoever. There was not a single trial day of aspartame from the FDA, and they passed it through. And Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld were both marketing CEOs of the company that put out aspartame. And guess who was stalking the White House a few years later? But this is the kind of people that, like, I think you were referring to a while ago, the people in these government positions. It's like, I wonder sometimes, does Dick Cheney have a soul? The cold man out, you know?
Yeah, that's been asked by a lot of people. I mean, does he really? You know, how you can do this and know and have the report and know what you're doing to other people? I don't know.
Yeah. It's a very, very frightening prospect to think that someone who would to put a few dollars in their pocket more than the next person, that would force a chemical weapon. I think aspartame is a chemical weapon. It's the only thing it could be. It's a poison. It's a weapon.
It is poison.
This country.
And it's like fluoride, which is so hard to get away from. And, I mean, it's horrible. They know that it dumbs down kids, and it crosses that barrier. If a woman is either using it on her teeth or it's in the water she showers in, whatever, and she's carrying a baby, it's going to get in the baby. You know, and yet they just keep on keeping on.
Oh, and the water, you're talking about the shower, you know, affecting a pregnant woman and absorbing through the skin. You think of what's in the water now. All of the people, all of the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, all of the antipsychotics and medication for, you know, acid penis syndrome and, you know, hair falling out of your head. Think of all this excretion in the water, all of these people pissing these drugs out, and they are pissing out metabolites of the drug, which means it renders it down to a more simple state, which means it is more easily into the drink water and thus into your body, and in turn metabolized by your own. All of the drugs that are going into the water and we're drinking, what are we doing? Why are we poisoning ourselves? Why are we letting these companies poison us all for money? It makes no sense.
It is all for money. And because with money you have control. So that's it. I mean, they want the power and the money. They like what money can buy. And, of course, it's all at the cost of the workers.
Oh, I mean, think about it. They turn around.
What's going on here? And
after making a buck off of poisoning all of us, they rape us in taxes in turn.
Yeah.
We work and give them money while they're killing us on the sly.
Right. And not even all that covertly. I mean, it's for a lot of us, I mean, it's very overt because we know and we talk about it. But it just hasn't reached that critical mass yet for people to actually do much about it. I mean, individuals and groups are doing some things, but we really need to do more to get more people on board.
So what they do is this: they act like the schoolyard bully that somebody thinks they call them out. Last the person and calls them out. What these people do is they make people look like conspiracy theorists. You know, they patent terms like sheep, and then they put people like Alex Jones out there in the front barking and screaming. You know, they turn it into a mockery. It's some aspects of the conspiracy theory community of those have turned into a reality TV type situation. It's a joke. It's a mockery. And no component of the conspiracy community is going to be taken seriously when it's being aped on purpose.
So nobody pays attention
and everybody stays asleep. And, you know, I hate to use the terms because, you know, we're talking about this. Laugh at it. You know, that's another way, you know, it's really too awful to acknowledge. So maybe if you laugh at it, it'll go away. It's like the boogeyman. Cover your head up and the boogeyman hit you. And if you laugh at it, it's not there.
Right.
You know, deny, consume, die. That's the pattern, you know, that seems to be the fact.
That's the chant that many live by, and those in power want more of us to live by that.
But to wrap it up for tonight, you are listening to Shadows Reflections on air on Montefeo Radio, Sunday evenings, Central. I'm Dina Goodwin, your host, and I'd like to thank our producer, Ruthann Montefeo, the lady herself.
Thank you. It's always fun talking with you. And next week, you said botched executions.
Botched executions. That should be a blast.
that will definitely,
Until then, I hope everybody recovers nicely from your Super Bowl party. I hope those that watched the Puppy Bowl enjoyed it as well.
I kept hearing about that, and I don't even know what it is. I'll just have to look it up on YouTube.
I think you'll appreciate it. It's a very nice, pleasant little thing.
Okay.
I'm going to sign off, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.